This is Ross Coulthart, and you are listening to That UFO Podcast.
Later, though, Dan, this year, in October, Tom DeLonge's got a new book coming out.
He does.
Co-authored with AJ Hartley, you'll be shocked to hear. Is there a relationship? Like, does AJ write the book and Tom comes in and goes, do this, no, I say this, and yeah, this is the character's name, and AJ make it good?
I have a feeling, Tom's the idea guy,
yeah.
AJ and Peter are the execution guys.
Can I read the description to the book, Dan, and then we can have a quick chat about it?
Yeah, go for it.
The book's called Time Rider. It's due out October, mid-October, later on this year, currently. Here we go. Go for a nap if you like here, Dan. In a future where history itself is weaponized, Corbell has just got a pinger, one agent must choose between the sterile perfection of his engineered society and the messy humanity of the past he was sent to manipulate. From New York Times bestselling author A.J. Hartley and the imagination of disruptive creator, what a tagline, Tom DeLonge, comes an electrifying sci-fi thriller that challenges our understanding of time, history, and humanity. Building on their successful collaboration on the acclaimed Secret Machines franchise, these creative powerhouses deliver a story that combines Hartley's masterful storytelling with DeLonge's specialized knowledge of anomalistic phenomena. Time Rider follows Bowie, an agent from a dystopian future called The Design, a society where humanity is stratified into genetic castes and emotional connections have been engineered away. Sent to 1963 on what he believes is a mission to preserve history, Bowie discovers he's actually part of a conspiracy to manipulate the past. Alongside journalist Sandra Rossi, he races through different time periods uncovering a shocking truth. The Design isn't preventing terrorists from changing history, it's orchestrating historical events to ensure its own existence. As Bowie experiences the raw emotions and connections absent from his sterile future, he begins questioning everything he was programmed to believe. The climax converges on the Kennedy assassination, revealing layers of deception that stretch across time and may involve non-human intelligence. More than a time travel adventure, this thought-provoking thriller examines totalitarianism, the manipulation of history, and what truly makes us human. Hartley and DeLonge craft a narrative that's both action-packed and philosophically rich, challenging readers to consider how our understanding of the past shapes our future and what parts of ourselves we can never allow to be engineered away. Time Rider is based on the Sinister Forces trilogy by Peter Lavender. What are your thoughts on Tom's new book?
So, I love that this is based on Sinister Forces, which I've just started reading. It's been on my list for ages, but Sinister Forces comes a lot into the God's Man War trilogy that To the Stars kind of produced and finished up last year. So, it's nice to see this kind of coming into a fictional way of talking about these ideas. Time Rider, you know, I assume the Time Rider, you know, the agent Bowie, surely that's based on David Bowie and is going to fuel a bunch of conspiracy theories about him being an alien.
Obviously.
But yeah, we've definitely spoken about whether some UFOs from the future are trying to influence past events to ensure their existence, just like kind of this says. So my ears perked up when I saw that here, because when we speak about secrecy and reasons for keeping things secret, maybe everyone knowing about this is one of those events that causes it to happen. Mm. So, I could understand that if they didn't want to. But also talking about, you know, where it says, as Bowie experiences the raw emotions and connections absent from his sterile future, and that he was programmed. That's interesting too, and we've definitely spoken about this before as well, where as we go forward, we're going to be doing things like gene editing and things like that and engineering certain emotions away. And looking at someone like Elon Musk, for example, who's doing things like Neuralink and stuff like CRISPR gene editing, just this week, you know, scientists unveiled that they'd recreated what we think of as the direwolf. Where we're starting to get into these parts of humanity where we can program ourselves and we're going to be changing ourselves in a major way. And I can't remember who it was, but someone floated the idea that in the future, we don't have emotion or we lost our souls or something like that. And these things are coming back to kind of try and change that. But I also love the idea that they're coming back to ensure that that happens. And kind of Skynet vibes, but with just humans at the center of it instead of a computer, you know?
Yeah, there's a few familiar themes running through there, but that'll be interesting. Looking forward to it and seeing how the UFO NHI narrative gets weaved throughout, which no doubt it will. So yeah, all be good. And a new documentary coming soon. It's been in the works for a while, Dan, on Bob Lazar, which is called S4. S4, the Bob Lazar story. So probably not hugely coincidental timing, but this has been in the project, been in the pipeline for a while now. Project Gravator, I'll put the link in the description for that, has the stuff on there. Have you watched a trailer for it, Dan?
I have, yeah.
You're a huge Bob Lazar fan. Tell me what you thought.
I've got this reputation as Bob Lazar hater now.
You are?
I'm really not. Like, I like his story. I think it's interesting. I think there's a lot we don't know and has been kind of squirreled away for one reason or another. But then you have to acknowledge the other side. And, you know, here's another example of someone that says they don't want to be in the limelight and they don't want to make money off their story, making money off their story and being in the limelight. So I get it. You know, it's a modernized version of it. I'm looking forward to it, but I don't know how much more we can do on the Bob story now. I feel like it's going to be one of those stories that we're probably never going to get the answer to, no matter how many posters we buy, you know?
It says new evidence, Dan.
I'm on the website now. Where is new evidence?
In the trailer.
Oh, does it? Okay.
Sure. Yeah. Okay.
Maybe I wasn't paying that much. Maybe I am a Bob Lazar.
Yeah, I mentioned this a couple of weeks ago or the other week. When I speak to people in public, like where I work, for example, anyone who mentions the UFO topic to me, when they mention, it will be something like, "Oh, I watched a thing with that guy," or "Do you know much about that guy?" Or, and they mean two people. One is Bob Lazar, and the other Stephen Greer. That tends to be where most folk publicly will talk about the UFO topic. Someone, I was talking to a mate today, and he was saying, I was watching a really interesting Rogan appearance recently, and it was Jason Sands. But again, he tends to know Greer, Lazar. That's a lot of the general public seem to have that in their head of that's the UFO topic, or these are some of the big names, and they're not wrong. So maybe it's not a bad thing to get a new documentary in a time where documentaries are more popular, perhaps, than they were 20 years ago, 25 years ago, 30 years ago, and get a new audience engaged in this story. I'm looking forward to it. I like the Bob Lazar story. I've got a really, and I've said this before, Dan, I've got a genuinely shit memory. So for me, I can rewatch something I've not seen for a couple of years and be like, oh, I'm not learning it again, but I'm remembering because my memory's so bad.
Sure.
I'm all for this. It does look like quite neat. I know Bob Lazar says in the trailer, and you wouldn't have heard it because you were too busy hating. Bob Lazar says in the hate. If anyone's ever seen the Player Haters Ball Dave Chappelle sketch, wonderful. Bob Lazar mentions this is the first time you'll ever see what I saw, what I've talked about, because they've rendered it with really decent looking CGI. So you should get like a tour of S4 within the documentary. What we haven't really seen before, really.
I'm pretty sure
Bob remembers.
He said, like, or at least the team behind the documentary have said, like, you know, Bob's guided these kind of recreations down to like where the rivets were, which I was like a little bit skeptical about, because after all this time, you remember exactly where the screws are. Maybe he has a didactic memory. I don't know, but to get everything exactly right. I didn't need that claim, you know.
Generally,
see what he saw. Cool, you know. And as you were saying that, then I was trying to think of like another Bob Lazar documentary that was really focused on just his story, because the Jeremy Corbell one, though it was Lazar focused, it kind of didn't just tell his story in like a linear fashion and show us what he saw. You know, and there are some people in this one as well that we haven't heard from before. On the website, it says that there's going to be some exclusive interviews with people that knew Bob, like his wife and people around him. We'll have the classics like, you know, George Knapp. But there's also Gene Huff, Bob's friend and key witness, Mario Santa Cruz, Bob's friend before, during, and after S4. Joy Lazar, that's Bob's wife and life partner. and Marcelo Romano, who's listed on the website as just heartwarming fan.
Yeah,
which
I saw
is
that.
Hilarious.
Yeah, and looks pretty young as well. Like,
yeah, he does.
Definitely donated the most on the crowdfunding. That's
where
that
yeah,
comes across.
So. But,
on that, Dan, we'll just mention to folks, I'm looking forward to this. I like the Bob Lazar story. I always think there's something to it. You know, story's awkward, but I think that's just the whole UFO topic. Listen to what we just talked about for an hour and a half. Even when there is a wealth of evidence and data, there's always something. I went on the website and pre-ordered. Well, we don't know. We don't think I've actually pre-ordered the documentary. There's a big pre-order button, and it says that you can get a poster as long as you pre-order before the 1st of May. What I thought I was doing, folks, was hitting the pre-order button, getting the documentary pre-ordered. There is no release date yet, just to put that out there. But if you order by the 1st of May, Bob Lazar will sign a poster. You can get a poster, depending on the size of poster you want, from theatrical size, like cinema poster, to smaller. He will then sign it for a $29.99 charge, whatever, as well. And I was like, ah, that's quite cool. You get a little merchandise pack with it. That's quite cool. And it worked out around something like £50 or whatever, like $70, $80, that is. But I don't think I've actually got the documentary as part of this. As I showed Dan, and then we were looking going, I can't see where I've actually ordered the documentary. So I think I've maybe just pre-ordered a poster that's signed.
I can see where you got the impression, though, because, you know, you chuck in the website, projectgravitor.com, and it just says new official trailer, and then you got two buttons side by side. One says watch trailer, the other one says pre-order now. That instantly implies that the pre-order is for the movie. Then beneath that, it says get your signed official film poster, limited time only, pre-order before May 1st, which makes it look like, okay, if you pre-order the film before May 1st, you get a free signed poster.
That's common, isn't it? Yeah, get it before this date, and you get some limited edition shit.
But then you go through, and Andy and I were going through it before we came on here, because even I had to check. Like, and just on the last listing of it, it talks about buying like the first edition film poster for the documentary. So I think that's what you've bought. And then you get a collector's kit, which is a certificate of authenticity, a magnet, a sticker, a bookmark, and then two set photos, which I assume will be, you know, the rendered set of the cool thing. And then you can add for $30 for Bob to sign the poster. And then you put your name in and pick whether you want the signature on the front or back, which is weird to me, always on the front. You can just hide it. That's a really odd layout. And I can't imagine only you being caught out by that.
Yeah, I have emailed them to ask, just to clarify, have I ordered the documentary as part of this, or are you not offering that yet? And maybe, you know, just watch how you word that on the website. But yeah, I'm looking forward to that coming out. And if not, I've paid for a poster. So,
I'm just looking on the website now. They have some other cool merch, like mugs and hoodies. And also,
the hoodie's got a bit much going on like that. For me. The hoodie's a bit
busy.
Yeah,
it's a bit busy.
I like
there's a cool Area 51 one, but yeah.
I like quite a plain hoodie with like a small logo or a small bit of writing somewhere on an arm or a badge or something. But yeah, it's too much going on there for me.
Lots of the arms and stuff like that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, Dan, any other news bits you want to go into before listener questions?
Not so much.
No,
it's mostly all been, you know, Solve Forum had a thing between Hal Puthoff, Jack Vallee, and Larry Lemke, and they got into kind of the Invisible College and how they all met. That's interesting if you want to go watch that. And then also, just scrolling down my list, Representative McConnell was on Jesse Michaels. He was basically just backing up what we've heard him kind of talk about before, the defense firms like Lockheed, SAIC, and Raytheon allegedly house non-human tech but block access through IP protections. And McConnell also talked about kind of whistleblowers kind of coming forward to them to attest to this and to attest to these programs kind of running, the ultimate message of it being that McConnell warning that if we don't reassert oversight now, the science may never reach the public.
Yeah, awesome. And I think a couple of people dropped me a message, Dan, just to say, had I seen or watched, apologies, and if anyone hears the roar in the background as it's busy here this time of day, David Duchovny has a new series, Secrets Declassified. I believe it's called, Secrets Declassified with David Duchovny. I think it's on Prime Video. It's on History. It looks like it'll be like an easy kind of fun watch, I'm guessing, if you're into that kind of stuff. On History, you know, name celebrity, the guy obviously was famously Fox Mulder, going through some conspiracy stuff and whatnot, and UFOs are part of it as well, it looks like, and other things too. So I've not watched it. I'll give it a watch at some point in the background. I don't think, I said to Dan earlier, I don't think it's one I'll be sitting with a notepad and pen expecting to learn much, but you know what you're getting with this kind of stuff. So yeah, it'll be interesting. Like David Duchovny, he's hosted a few things kind of documentary style over the years. And no, I don't mean the Red Shoe Diaries.
I liked him in Twin Peaks as well.
Californication.
Californication was great, yeah.
Great series, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, and while just a shout out to Joe Maggia, whose dog this week passed away.
Yes.
Bless them all. And just, you know, how goes out to you, Joe. And I hope you're all doing okay.
Yeah. Seen that Ed's dog Cookie had been ill for a while and hung on there for a long time. But yeah, all the best to Joe and family as well with that situation. Listener questions, Dan, let's dig into these, okay? Because a couple of random questions, but a lot of thoughts and expectations around what we talked about in terms of Skywatcher Part 2. Going to start off with Apoplectic Spock. Love that. They gave their view of what they thought the video would be like Part 2 before it came out. I want to know what you think, if it was fair or not. They said, I'm expecting tiny, fuzzy, illuminated blobs to be shown with subsequent speculation and impressive sensor data that will mean essentially nothing to the common person. Tomorrow will just be another day. Nothing changes for society without truly compelling corroborated visuals.
Pretty spot on, no?
Spock on or spot on?
Spock on.
Spock on?
Yeah.
It's quite a pessimistic view because I think we're going to see a lot of folks were quite happy with what came out. There will be a theme of they had a low bar and low expectations. I don't think with what came out you can... Well, you can if you want to be, but you shouldn't be devastated. You shouldn't be really disappointed. But I think there's then a big chunk in the middle where people will vary on that range. I also wouldn't be, oh my God, this is incredible. I'm optimistic. I think you came across that way as well, Dan. Yeah, there's a lot of room here for this to go well and work. However, a lot of work needs to be done before then.
Yeah, I'd say the comments are fair there. And we've talked about this before, and so have Richard Dolan and Bryce in their book After Disclosure that they wrote together. That
never heard
once
that
disclosure
one
happens, you're still gonna have to go to work tomorrow. You're still gonna have to pick up kids tomorrow. It's gonna be true whether this stuff all pans out or not. That life goes on.
Question from Baniel Detterstrom: where can I get those cool UFOs or real t-shirt? No, I'm joking. question from David. He says, what the heck would Skywatcher do if they call down something that lands in front of them? I'd love to hear what rules and parameters are around that possibility. This for me it makes a great point around the initial claim was they can bring these things down and land them in front of them. And now it's been a little bit more, wait, actually what we can do is bring them into the atmosphere. From there though, like, we don't know how long they stay, how long that takes, all that kind of stuff. And again, Dan, it wasn't just me, was it? And it seemed to be folks on the Discord when I asked this as well. I got the impression that they were in a place where they can summon this stuff to land right in front of them.
Yeah, that's what was said. In that very first video, they say that they summoned the egg and then it fell out of the sky when their psionic guy lost connection with it. In part two, they suggest that these things are not man-made and they do want to avoid the team summoning, and even say that Class 7 was aggressive and was trying to encroach and get over the team. So there's definitely danger here that, or a possibility here. I won't say danger because that's the threat narrative, right? There's definitely a possibility here that these things are going to be getting closer and closer. Just like, you know, if you were studying gorillas in the jungle, they'd get comfortable with you over time and they'd come closer and closer and closer. I don't think Skywatcher has spoken about, and it certainly doesn't talk about it in the, you know, the what's it called?
the manifesto thing or whatever you want to call it.
Manifesto. Like, it's very much a manifesto. Framework, yeah. Manifestos for murderers.
Yeah, that's the one.
Yeah. But yeah, they should. They should address that because it's a possibility. And as crazy as it sounds that it might happen, they should be prepared in the event of that happening, because it could be that someone with a gun there freaks out and just loses their head when the aliens show up, you know?
Interesting. I didn't deliberately put this next to it, but great follow-on question from Slade. I'm still a bit confused about the purpose of the 50 caliber machine gun. Jake said it's not for offensive purposes, but rather defensive. He also indicated it wasn't for use against any summoned UAP, going so far as to equate it to bringing a knife to a gunfight. So, what potential adversary are they defending against? Do you have any insight, or did I miss further clarification while warming up my lasagna? Interesting times, he says, to sign off with. I think we kind of covered this a little bit earlier, Dan, but again, it did seem like the machine gun is for more human-based potential threats, or I imagine Chinese drones going overhead, or whatever that may entail. That sound fair? I don't think it was we're going to use a 50 caliber machine gun to try and shoot ET.
No, I would summarize it by saying protecting themselves from dickheads on the range. But also, we have heard from Jake in that initial interview with Russ that they thought they were being set up by the people that run the program to kill them, to keep quiet what they know. So it could also be to ensure their defense against anyone that shows up to stop them doing what they're doing from that side of things.
Yeah. Yeah, that's fair. And these are all, I think Jake said this too, very experienced military personnel who know how to handle this weaponry. It's not something they would be using or firing without a good idea of what they were doing and what damage they could cause, or indeed warning shots, all that kind of stuff as well. So, Thomas said, what would constitute truly solid evidence that they're genuinely and specifically interacting with the phenomenon? They've set expectations high at a time in which the UFO community seems to have had enough sooning and hype that fails to be justified. So what, if anything, could Skywatcher produce that would satisfy the UFO community and hopefully the broader community that their approach is bearing real fruit?
I think for one, and it's what everyone's calling for right now after seeing the video they did give us, which is HD video, you know, real sharp kind of close-up stuff so we can see whether it's balloon or not. The other thing I would say is kind of, I guess I would call it in a way like birdseed. You know, you put something out and you get a definite response. So like a call and response type thing. If they're going to flash lights, I think it was it David Mason in the UAPX documentary who produced some technology that would turn sound into light and then flash it at the UFO and see if they would get a response. If it was like mimicking, kind of like that.
So that
like
was
Close Encounters of the Third Kind. At the end of that, you know, when they play the music, and the humans copy it, and then they kind of start building on it to each other. There has to be that kind of connection because, yeah, just kind of being on the ground and being like, oh, yeah, you know, it was coming right for us, when there's nothing to kind of show that you know what it was thinking or what its intentions were. It needs to be more. There needs to be something more robust there. So maybe that should become a part of the framework.
And to be fair, you would think if it was going to be something that would damage, I know this kind of goes back to the last question as well, that would damage an object, they'd be looking at some kind of EMP, you know, to disable stuff rather than a machine gun, because what's that potentially going to do? I don't know. And in terms of what they could produce, I'm fully with you there, like a decent HD video. I think a perhaps longer video of one of the experiments happening. Perhaps doing it live, like a YouTube live, and they don't even have to show us the equipment. Again, that would depend on time scales and stuff. But say it as a case of flicking this machinery on and within 5 minutes something happens. Could they announce we're going to do a YouTube live, set the conditions that they are fully happy with the protection, the transparency, their own state safety, and say, we're going to try and summon one of these things, you know, and knock it on within a few minutes it appears. So, something like that, I think, would get people's attention. But I think regular updates as a baseline, but there needs to be progress going forward to build on what they've got. Otherwise, I see what people mean who worry it becomes a TV show, or it's almost like that would be a negative right now if, and I don't know if this is even something they intend to, but if it did get signed up by History or something. But then perhaps what if, Dan, this was signed up to a major TV network? Or what if Apple TV or Netflix picked this up and went, we want like an 8-part series from you? And these folk involved go, yes, but it's not going to be recurring. This is a one and done series. Would you feel more comfortable there?
Yeah, I mean, it's the same as if they said, yeah, we're going to commission a documentary, right? Whether it's 8 episodes or whether it's a 2-hour thing. I'd be fine with that as long as it wasn't that Oak Island kind of format that is just tiring.
I don't really watch that, but is that the gold
one?
It's
the Skinwalker Ranch. We're digging for gold on this island, and oh, we've almost found something, and oh, it collapsed. Join us next week for digging the other hole, and it just goes on and on and on.
Going to be some Oak Island fan, absolutely furious at that opinion, but I think that's common.
There are kind of subtleties to it, but there's a lot of like human drama between the people there, where one person wants to dig here, the other person wants to dig there, and is funding the dig. So that kind of becomes a part of the show. And I think as long as it was like a really focused documentary or documentary series on results and different aspects of it, then I think we'd be okay.
Cool. So let's go through. I think I'm going in the right order here from folks, okay, on Patreon comments I asked last night. What are folks' expectations? Post them in here, but also post what your thoughts are on the actual content as it appears. So a couple of people posted, Jonathan said, I'm looking forward to this. I'm hoping there's something in this that raises a few eyebrows, or at least something substantial that moves the needle a little bit further. As always, my expectations are tempered but hopeful. I really enjoyed the recent interview Barbara did with Ross Coulthart. He seems focused. But being a former top-tier operative, that probably comes with the territory. Fair commentary. Paul said, my childlike brain is so excited for this Skywatcher episode to drop. Unfortunately, I'm no longer a child, and this merry-go-round simply refuses to stop. A wise man once said, insanity is doing the same thing over and over again, but expecting different results. We'll hopefully know more in the next few hours. Richard put, by their fruits, we shall know them. And that's not unfair, you know, depending on what we get from them. So Eli said, this week in UAP disclosure entertainment episodic consciousness love bomb connection egg hijacking, the second installment that doesn't address the last episode's claims but goes into new territories about other craft and entities, love goddess spiritualism with a dash of jellyfish. I'm also hedging my bet because these guys could be legit, something like that. If I'm wrong, well, you can call me out later. Then it released. So these are the comments from people who have now seen it. And I've got some questions amongst these as well, Dan. Unidentified said, just skimmed it. Lots of claims, fuzzy tiny videos. Gut says scam. Sorry. Froggy emoji. Fair opinion. Like, again, it's just courses for courses.
Still watch it though. And that's what Skywatcher want, right? Like, that's where they're getting their ad money on YouTube. So if you think it's a scam, don't go along with it. But at the same time, good job watching it despite thinking that.
Byron said, wow, the imagery is pretty compelling. Now we wait for it to be validated by third parties who are invited to review the data. So very juxtaposition comments immediately, back to back, Dan. And I think that's how this has kind of generally landed, although I think landed far more on the positive side.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I'm surprised by how little vitriol there is online over this today.
You'll be on with your mini burner accounts later, stoking that up, won't you?
Just about Bob Lazar.
Yeah, just Bob Lazar called on this bullshit years ago. Like, and he's a faker as well.
I've got my cover of How Bizarre, How Bizarre, but Bob Lazar, ready to go.
Fantastic. I could buy you one of those posters, Dan, and just get Bob to sign it. I hate you.
Yeah, to my hater.
To my hater. Thanks for all the support. Peter said, why would UAP be attracted to the dog whistle? Surely the would-be NHI would recognise they're being summoned and would bugger off when they hear it. Interesting and very, very bloody video. There should be a lot of loud teeth gnashing any minute now. For what it's worth, I did find the video compelling. So first off, why would the UAP be attracted to the dog whistle? I'll just jump on that one first, Dan. I think there are elements of UAP that may be attracted. We don't know that these aren't almost potentially the equivalent of attracting wild animals. You know, like if you go out into the forest and let off any number of, you know, legitimate whistles, it would attract ducks or bears or, you know, devices that attract certain types of wildlife. This could be the equivalent, where the more intelligent or higher level beings don't even hear this stuff or are aware of it and would be like, no, we're not coming because you blew a dog whistle, you know.
Yeah, it comes down to curiosity, like you say, animalistic, like bugs to light type thing. But also, I think we need to remember that intelligent creatures do kind of move towards things like that. Countless examples of, you know, if you're put in the middle of a dark forest and you see a light, you're going to go towards the light because you think safety's there. We got to remember the perspective that any other creatures might be coming from and what they might be seeing. That might be the only reason they're attracted to nuclear materials, is because they show up like a beacon in a dark forest to them.
Yeah. Kristen said, I've learned to keep my expectations fairly low despite the hype. Well done. The video is compelling. I can only imagine how hard it is to capture these craft since they're so far advanced and are so good at evading sight, mostly. In the case of the Phoenix Lights, that craft or crafts obviously wanted to be seen. My question is, do these crafts want to be summoned, or is it that the summoning forces them into sight? Again, there's that idea that we're actually summoning craft here, because quite a few of those objects don't necessarily look or appear to be craft, do they? You could be summoning. Can I just add to that? On the Tic Tac, that is something we largely would call a craft, and it's a modern day classic UFO craft. Doesn't mean there's something in it. And perhaps we are tapping into, like, if you've got a drone, Dan, and you're controlling your drone, there are ways and softwares you can download that I could take over your drone remotely. Are we kind of doing that in a way where we're interfering with whatever these things are doing, and they've got some kind of signal that they react to, and it's similar to what's used by the source? I don't know.
Yeah, no, you're exactly right. Like, if with the drone, you can set, like, you know, come home, basically, and it'll kind of go to those coordinates. If you could confuse the system somehow and give it your coordinates instead of where it originated, it would come to you. It doesn't mean that it wants to be summoned. There's no intention there. You're just taking over the machinery, so to speak.
Yeah. Makuts says, I thought that was pretty impressive. I mean, yes, the video was still fuzzy, but features are clearer, differences are apparent, and they are summoning the objects at will. Gary Nolan's presence is encouraging too. Like the Atacama skeleton, if it's bunk, he's going to call it. I also think that it's possible that the resolution issue is related to tracking and speed of these objects. Is it possible that there are cameras that can get way better images, but that they can't move fast enough right now to follow the objects as they move in the sky? Right now, at face value, from what they've shown in this recent episode, Dan, it seems to me that that's largely the case, that they're calling these things, they've got some base equipment, but to actually get a load of drones up in the sky, high altitude balloons, whatever they might need, is difficult and costly, and is just the scale of that would be hard to do. And then also, we have seen they tried to use a helicopter, and we've seen allegedly had issues even doing that as well. So, yeah.
Yeah, that's a fair comment. Like, for me, the better cams thing, like, yes, there are better cameras available. I guess they're trying to, you know, you don't buy the biggest and best thing when you're doing these projects. You buy the bare minimum of what you think you need, and they're realizing they need better. So I would hope that going forward, they would get better equipment. You know, the cameras they use in only have like small sensors, and they can get ones with bigger sensors so they can resolve things further away in high detail. So switch to those. And also, I would say, you know, get some sports photographers and camera people there, because they've got to follow high-speed action, unexpected action. There are people with these skill sets that I don't think they're looking to for this kind of coverage. So it would be great if they could get those.
Dan, like, when I started this, like, I had my laptop and an okay microphone, which was my main purchase, like, before I even started it, right? Just to do the job and see what it was like. And then after a while, even the software I was using, I used Skype, you then go, oh, I want to make this better. There are other things out there that then cost money. So you then upgrade your mic, you upgrade the software. I got a desktop. I then had an issue down the line where the desktop broke. So I was like, I can't have that happen. This is a nightmare. So I then got a MacBook as a backup, which had all kinds of, like, you know, actually, I have this functionality now. I can be more remote, et cetera, et cetera. I hadn't ever thought about that, but things change. I then got the desktop, repaired. I almost replaced the entire thing, basically, and got someone to build it for me. So I've got a desktop and I've got the MacBook. But then you upgrade the microphone. Actually, I want to change this. I then want to change the quality of X, Y, and Z. So you naturally just build on things as you go along and you learn stuff and you want to change. And that's essentially what they're doing to scale, isn't it? Where we've got enough to start what we want to do and they'll learn as they go along and as things happen. I didn't start this and go, I need two computers in case one breaks. That's ridiculous. I mean, maybe if you had the money, you could do that. But these guys have finance and funding. But if they go and say, we want this, 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 and this, maybe the guys funding it in the background are going, look, get us some results first. Then we can look at the next stage of funding. We'll give you the money for this stuff, and this will do the basics. But if you can get us something off of this, then it unlocks, you know, the checkbook, which I think would be fair because you wouldn't just dive in and give them millions off the bat, would you?
Yeah, exactly. And you can kind of see that taking place with Skinwalker Ranch as well. You know, build the property. Let's get in there, learn what questions we have to ask and what tools can solve those problems. And then the more they study it, the more questions come up, the more tools they need. So it's a constant game of you know, refining your technique, which they seem to be doing. I hope they continue to do.
Very jealous of that control room Eric Bard has, though. That is very, yeah, right. Very cool. Yeah. That would be like such a cool bedroom. Kristen, who asked a question earlier, added a follow-up thought. She said, I wonder why they are gatekeeping the dog whistle tech. Is it to keep it out of the wrong people's hands, or are they keeping it secret for a possible patent? I imagine it's not something they've created and that they know and no one else does. For me, this is just they don't want anybody and everyone who could use this using it. And there is that. Probably this is where there are some national security implications. Is that fair?
Yeah, safety thing. But also, I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, there was a patent kind of thing going on. Whether they let people buy it, I doubt it. But, you know, certain aspects of that technology will be engineered into other technologies. So, yeah, they might want to sell it to Lockheed, for example.
Yeah, but in terms of funding, it probably protects you a little bit there as well, doesn't it? That any number of organizations might not know or be able to get their hands on this now. But if you've got backers who are looking for you to perform, which they have to perform, they do have a pressure to produce, as far as we know, then that's something they may have as a bit of a, we've got this and other people don't. Okay, cool. So you've got my attention. You know, that's how you get investors and that's how you get backers. So yeah, we'll find out. But yeah, I don't think it's, will be completely secret to the gatekeepers, for example. But like you say, perhaps down the line, it's on Amazon for $10, Dan, eventually, you know.
Yeah, we'll see.
Michael said, nothing profound or game-changing, period. So Michael enjoyed it.
Did he type period? Or this is just
He typed period and then put a period afterwards. So yeah. Amy says, I like the structured approach they're taking. It may not be perfect, but it puts a stake in the ground to help advance understanding of a phenomenon about which we know little. The eight gone, Jake mentioned a while ago, didn't seem to fit into any of the nine classes. What explains the disconnect? Maybe the eight gone is a human-made replica vehicle. Yeah, not unfair. Probably what I touched on earlier, Dan, about we don't see any saucers.
Yeah, there's a whole bunch of UFO shapes that, you know, someone sent me a chart after I posted the stabilized video on Twitter, and it had like 60 different shapes on it, and it was made back in the 60s. So yeah, there are just certain shapes not represented here that might not work with the dog whistle.
Yeah. And again, you mentioned it, I mentioned it, Dan, of those nine shapes, some of those may condense down to actually this is the same thing we think, or this is this, but in a slightly different form. It could be, and I think you said this earlier, which is very fair, we've found out this is a balloon. This is actually a Chinese reconnaissance balloon, similar to what we had before, but just not as big. We don't know.
Sure. But I'm also thinking of you know, nope, how the saucer like unfurls at the end into that like massive satanic fold looking thing.
Yeah.
You know, different forms, different things in different environments and moods.
Absolutely. Ben said, I'm more impressed than I expected to be, but the bar wasn't high. A man after our own heart there, Dan, isn't it? Go on with low expectations.
You can big let down.
Emily said, and I think we've answered this one, what did they mean by the class 7 type being aggressive? It just sounded like more in terms of maneuverability and a little bit more buoyant. I don't think it came across like trying to attack them, but more interactive in a sense.
Yeah, I think they specifically kind of said that it was trying to get over their position. But again, we're ascribing behavior to something that we don't even know whether it's an intelligence or not. So I'm a little wary of that comment.
And Nick says, that was better than I expected, but would like to know how long they typically film these craft. Most of the videos were about 2 seconds long. Would love it if they posted some full-length videos in the future. Perhaps that would be good for... from a research point of view, you know, you get like, God, I hate to use the comparison, but Skinwalker Ranch, and they have like the monthly paid subscription. Maybe they could have an option here where for a couple of dollars you can access, because server room, all that kind of stuff, folks, again, this is people's time and everything, and storage isn't free. They could post some stuff, you could pay a couple of dollars, go on and see the longer versions of these things, you know, get access to some of the data. I don't know, but again, it goes down that slippery slope of charging for stuff. So yeah, but thoughts on that last one, Dan?
I mean, pretty much echo what you said there, to be honest. I'd love to see them kind of give better access to the data stores, but at the same time, I know they're going to be wanting to make those secure and give those to people that want to do third party independent peer review and stuff like that. And to be honest, I would want the peer review to happen over, you know, me as just a dude on Twitter being curious about it.
Yeah, no, that's totally fair. Dan, I've got a couple of questions from one listener and a second from another that I was going to say we'll stick those on Patreon and whatnot for people who are supporting the podcast in that respect, if you've got a few minutes more.
Sure.
Yeah. One of them's from Bob Lazar, says a big fan of yours. if you are leaving us here, folks, and you're on the free feeds for April, you'll see a link in the description. You can click on it and get a month free access to the Patreon, and you'll get early access, no adverts, and you'll get to hear myself and Dan speaking a little bit longer on this kind of stuff. And there's loads of bonus content in the archive and stuff like that as well. Apple, you get access to free trials for a couple of weeks too. All the other platforms don't offer that kind of stuff, but the options are there. If you're leaving us here, thank you very much. Dan, anything you want to sign off with for those folks?
Be nice to each other and be nice to Skywatcher as well. We want them to answer our questions, so no animosity. And thank you for listening.
Absolutely. And otherwise, thank you for listening, and we'll carry on, Dan.
Hi everyone, if you listen to the podcast on an Apple device, you can support directly by going on to Apple Podcasts and clicking the subscribe button, and for less than the price of a coffee per month, you can get early access to episodes in full, and no adverts or sponsorships like this one you're hearing now. It also supports directly to me at the podcast, so thank you very much. Also, don't forget to go and leave the podcast on Apple a 5-star review, and make sure you click the follow button too. Thanks.